It is a good evening. No, I hope that you all had a good afternoon. Kylie and I did. We got to go spend some more time with the McKinneys this afternoon. They can cook. I'm just letting you know. If you ever go over there, bring pants that can expand a little bit. So, but no, we had a really good time. It was good getting to visit with them. And Kylie feels real comfortable because they're normal like she is, because they're from the South and they aren't weird like I am because I'm from the North. But, you know, it's the interesting thing. God sometimes puts things right in your path, and sometimes it just strikes you. As we were walking out the door, the most beautiful thing, there was these quail that were running through their property, and it had about, I don't know, 15 baby quail that were running right behind them the whole way. And it might have been 20 of them. I don't know. There was a whole ton of them. But it was just beautiful. And it's really interesting. The first thing I thought of was the whole, you know, baby duck concept, because whatever imprints on that animal at the beginning, it will follow that thing no matter where it goes, right? I mean, it could be a cat that imprints on a baby duck, but if it thinks that's its mother, that baby duck is going to follow that cat anywhere, right? And why am I talking about this? Well, we've been spending a lot of time talking about discipleship, and we've been spending a lot of time talking about following Jesus. Tonight, we're going to dig into the text in Colossians chapter 3, verse 17. And I want us to just get some more practical applications for ourselves. And when we look at this passage, what I want to do is we're going to just focus on one part of this passage. And of course, this is one of those topics that you could almost preach about anything from this verse, can't you? Whatever you do, in word and deed, do all in the name of the Lord and give thanks to God. And it's just amazing when you look at a passage like that, you're like, okay, whatever I do, that's pretty broad, isn't it? You know, Keith is always saying, what does all leave out? Well, what does whatever leave out? You know, nothing. And so this is one of those passages that's really difficult. How do you wrap your minds around it? Well, for me, I want us to just focus on one part of this text tonight. And we're going to focus on whatever we do indeed, do all in the name of the Lord. Because in Daniel chapter 11, verse 32, Daniel says that those who know their God will stand firm and take action. One of my favorite little golden nuggets from the Old Testament. And though it is very pertinent and vital that we make sure that we have the right teaching, you know, in the name of the Lord, by authority, it means next to nothing if we don't then follow up that right teaching with right action. Because that's just talking the talk instead of actually walking the walk. And I think the way that Jack put it this morning is that God is less concerned necessarily with what originally comes out of our mouth and more concerned with what we actually are going to do. It was like the parable of the two sons. One said, I will do your work, but what did he do? He did what he wanted instead. One originally said, I won't do your work, but he ended up doing the work of his father and the will of his father. And as we break this text apart, I want us to begin by really bringing out this concept about right teaching and versus right action. And go ahead and turn over to Romans chapter 2 for a moment. And what I want to begin with is just this concept that right teaching without right action is just simply hypocrisy. And have you ever heard this expression, or have you ever said this expression? Do what I say and not what I do. Have you ever said that maybe yourself? And I've heard some parents say it, and I get the concept behind that statement. Because we're not perfect, and the standard that we hold others to is perhaps a right standard, and sometimes we fall short of that. And we hold ourselves to that same standard. And so that's kind of where that expression comes from. Do what I say and not what I do. But though I get the point of this expression, what's built into it is this admittance that yes, what I do and what I say are two different things. That there's a disconnect between what I'm asking you to do and what I'm actually going to do myself. And that's just a lack of integrity, and we call it in other places hypocrisy. The Jews are a good example of this in Romans chapter 2. And we're going to start with a poor example, and then we're going to move to a good example. I want to start with the poor example. And when we talk about the Jews, now, before we even read this, what was the standard by which the Jews should have judged themselves and also judged the actions of those that were around them? What was their standard that they always went to and read and followed? It was the law. The law of Moses and the prophets is what they followed. Now, was the law good and right and perfect? It was good and it was right. We'd find out that Jesus would be better, but the law was good and right and perfect. But there was a problem. Let's read verse 1. It says, "Therefore you have no excuse, O man, every one of you who judges. For in passing judgment on another, you condemn yourself." Why? "Because you, the judge, practice the very same things. And we know that the judgment of God rightly falls on those who practice such things. Do you suppose, O man, you who judge those who practice such things and yet do them yourself, that you will escape the judgment of God?" Fast forward just a few verses to verse 21. After this lengthy section where Paul says, "You who believe, you're a light to the Gentiles and a teacher to the foolish and an instructor to the simple." He goes on in verse 21 to say, "You then who teach others, do you not teach yourself? While you preach against stealing, do you steal? You who say that one must not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, dishonor God by breaking the law. For as it is written, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you." I want you to think about how that would come across to a Jew. To a Jew, they thought that they were proclaiming God's glory to the Gentiles. And through the law and the reading of the law, they were proclaiming the goodness and glory of God. But through their actions, they were doing the exact opposite. And they were actually doing things that blasphemed God's name among the Gentiles. Things that the Gentiles weren't even doing. Isn't that what was happening in the church in Corinth? Remember when Paul's writing about the man who had his father's wife? He said the Gentiles don't even practice these things. God's name is being blasphemed among a people that don't know Him by a people that supposedly know Him. And I have to ask myself this question, and that is, am I guilty of the same things? What do I mean? Well, this is very clear. Did they have the right teaching when they were teaching against these things, against sexual immorality and against stealing and against adultery? I mean, everything that the law taught. Did they have the right teaching? Yes. But the problem was they didn't follow it up with the right action. And it meant what they were doing was almost next to nothing. Just use this example for a moment. I think about Ephesians chapter 5, where Paul says, "Have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness." And we can preach that, and I might get up here and preach against sexual immorality and preach against darkness and preach against these types of things, but I have to look at my life and think, is that really true for me, though? Am I actually having nothing to do with unfruitful works of darkness? Because in all of our own lives, and I think in America, what's really unique about our culture is we have this justification system for things that we find entertaining. You don't find that a lot in many other cultures. But within our culture, that's certainly pertinent. Where I might preach against these things, but then I might go to a movie or I might be reading something or watching something or listening to something that completely contradicts these things. It is definitely partaking in works of darkness, but I might say things like, oh, well, it doesn't bother me, right? Or, well, if I can't watch that, then really I can't watch anything. And, well, maybe we're onto something there. You know, Kylie and I don't have cable, and we never will. What we own is what we know we can watch. And just this last week, there was something that got put in, and we had bought it a long time ago, and we went, we don't remember all these things. And so guess what? Kylie said, let's throw this away. And we did. And that's just an example, and I appreciate my wife setting that godly example for me, because it is so easy to justify our actions and think this is okay for me, but it's not okay for anyone else. And when I'm doing that, I'm perhaps serving God in word, saying the right things, but I'm not doing the right things. Because here's the problem. If my attitude is that of, oh, it doesn't bother me, that's the first problem, because guess what? It should, right? Now, maybe it's not with sins of commission. Maybe it's with something that I should be doing, a good thing that I'm preaching we should do, but I'm not doing. Let me just give you one example. Remember in James chapter 1, we're told that religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to visit widows and orphans in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. And there's a lot of debate amongst brethren about money and church finances and how they should be used based on this verse, and we're not getting into that tonight. But I do want to say this. Perhaps someone believes and is completely sound in their doctrine and in how we ought to approach as the church taking care of widows and orphans. I want to ask this question though. What am I doing? Not what is the church doing, but what am I doing? Because I might get up here and preach that we've got to take care of the widows and the orphans in need, but then I expect someone else to do that work and not myself. I want to tell you something that gets on my nerves a lot. Is I've heard this in preacher groups especially, and I just want to wring some necks, but I'm young so I can't do that yet. I have to wait till I get older and then I can wring some necks. But when I hear preachers say things like, well, that's not part of the job, my job description, or part of my job as a preacher. And it could be things like visiting the sick or, you know, putting meals together for someone. All right. I get that sometimes that those who are up in front leading a congregation are expected to do everything. And no, we can't do everything. You've got to pick and choose sometimes throughout the week. But if my attitude is that of, that's not my job, then I'm sorry, you need your neck wrung, because that's the job of every single Christian, period. Whether you're a preacher or not, it's my job to take care of those who have need within our flock. Whether they're widows or orphans or those that are struggling through a hard time, that is my job. And how dare I get up here and preach for everyone else to do their job when I'm not willing to do mine? Does that make sense? David Tant is a supreme illustration and example for me. And a lot of y'all know Jeff Tant, and I think he's still out in McMinnville. And I went to camps and such with his son, Davis. But Jeff's father, David Tant, won the Friend of Youth Award for the Florida College lectures a couple years ago. And it was because of this story, basically. A long time ago, he was in a debate with a brother who was believed, because of his stance on how church funds ought to be used, and called him an anti. And he, this was the accusation brought against Brother Tant. Is he said, Brother Tant would rather allow a child to bleed to death after being hit in the parking lot than using a church phone to call the police. And that was the accusation brought against him. Now, he could have responded verbally and said, that's not true, and said some things back, but what he did instead was he decided, you know what, I'm not going to talk the talk, I'm going to walk the walk. And in the next many years of their lives, David and his wife hosted some 50 orphans and plus in their homes that lived with them for periods of time. And they took them in as their own children. Now that is a supreme example. Because when I was talking to him, his point was, you know, we might argue about authority and these things here, but when it came down to it, I realized that I actually wasn't really doing anything though. And that's the problem. And I have to look at myself and I have to ask, what am I doing? Or perhaps it's maybe with evangelism. We talk about evangelism all the time. And all of us do. And we talk about reaching the lost and reaching out. But I have to ask this question, what am I actually doing? Not what is the church as a whole doing and expecting other people to do it all, but what am I personally doing? And remember when Tommy Peeler asked this question? I will never get this illustration out of my mind. And he asked, am I a commentator or a player? Now, when you listen to ball games, and Bob and I, we have the same cross we have to bear. We're Mariners fans, right? And it is a cross to bear because they don't do so well most of the time. And I remember listening to a game a couple weeks ago, and Robinson Cano had struck out like 3 times in the game. And they were just harassing him about a player of his caliber that's being paid what he is. I don't think it was Mariners commentators. But they were saying he shouldn't, at this level, he shouldn't be striking out 3 times in a game. He's got to do better than that if he's going to lead this ball team. You know what would have probably changed their perspective, though? Is if one of them got in the batter's box and tried to do the same thing he was doing. You see, when you're not doing any of the work, it's really easy to stand on the side and commentate about how everything isn't being done right and how everyone else is wrong. But that's my question, is am I a commentator or am I a player? What am I doing? Yes, you might have good observations. You might look at and assess things and say, hey, we're not reaching the lost like we should. Okay, well then the follow-up is, well then what are you going to do about it? What's your plan? What can we do then? Don't just complain about it. Do something about it. Because right talk without right action is just simply blowing smoke. It's just hypocrisy. And ultimately, well, let's look at a good example before we get there. This is a positive example. When we look at Paul's relationship with Timothy and Titus, there are so much in these texts. And I want you to notice, anytime Paul talks about them having the right teaching, he immediately follows it up with making sure they also have the right action. Look at what he says to Timothy. Command and teach these things. Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and purity. Until I come, devote yourself to public reading and of Scripture, and to exhortation, and to teaching. Skip down to verse 15. Practice these things. Immerse yourself in them so that all may see your progress. And keep a close watch on yourself and your teaching. Timothy, whatever you do in word and in deed, you keep a close watch on yourself, your actions, and your teaching. For by doing so, you will be able to save both yourself and your hearers. Same words that are used to Titus. He starts out chapter 2 addressing his doctrine, what he does in word. But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. That's vital. It has to happen. But verse 7, show yourselves in all respects to be a model of good works. And in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. He says, Titus, don't just have integrity in your teaching, have integrity in your actions. Don't just talk the talk. Titus, you've got to walk the walk. What you teach and the standard you hold others to, and as you preach what is right, you need to be also doing what is right. It's like when, I love that, so that others may have nothing to put to shame about you. You know, I'm not a politics guy, but it's amazing. When someone's running for office politically, They really try hard to clean up anything about their past, don't they? Why? Because if the media catches one word about something they did when they were 14, they're going to twist it and blow it up to try to destroy their credentials or destroy their reputation or whatever it is, right? It's exactly what they tried to do to Daniel in Daniel chapter 3. Remember the presidents and satraps when Daniel was placed in charge and they said, well, we got to find something against this guy. And they searched and they searched and they searched. And you know what they came up with? Nothing. And they said, the only way that we can put something against this man is if it's in accordance with his God, because we know that he won't disobey the ordinances of his God. And what Paul is saying here to Titus is the same thing. You show that kind of integrity in your words and in your actions. So that way, when people try to bring you down or have something to say about you, in fact, they'll be the ones that are put to shame. Because what you say is backed up 100% by what you do. But brethren, if it's not, then I've got some issues and I've got some problems. And this is going to lead us into our final point. Don't just tell someone what to do. Show someone what to do. And as we're thinking about mentorship in this class that started, mentorship is not just telling the next generation what the church is supposed to do. Mentorship is showing them what the church is doing and is supposed to do. And the problem with mentorship so many times is we're so busy just telling the next generation what's right and what to do instead of actually bringing them to the older and having it demonstrated for them how that's supposed to look and happen. Well, let's do an illustration. And this is the general rule, that people will generally follow our actions over our words. And I want to do a short exercise that was done by Brent Hunter in Kirkland back on March 20th. And he did this fantastic lesson on passing on values to the next generation. And you can go to Kirkland's website and you can listen to it. And I highly, highly, highly encourage you to do that. But in his own lesson, he talked about not reinventing the wheel. So I'm just stealing his illustration, the whole thing. So I need participation, okay? I really need participation for this to work. But I want everyone to go ahead and raise their left hand and go ahead and raise it about 10 inches above your knee, all right? Now, on the count of four, I want you to bring your hand down. I want you to hit your knee pretty loudly. Okay, you ready? One, two, three, four. All right. What just happened? Let's make some observations here. All right. First of all, most of you still had your hand up here. Why? That's where my hand was. I said 10 inches. That's not 10 inches, right? And when I said on four, when I went down on two, guess what all of you did, or most of you did? You went down on two. Because it wasn't about what I was saying. You were imitating what I was doing. All right, now go ahead and touch your ear. Oh, I got a couple of you. I set you up and you still did it. All right. Go ahead and put your hands down. You know, that completely explains why the expression do what I say and not what I do doesn't make any sense. Because despite saying that, guess what people are still going to do? They're still going to do what you do and not necessarily what you say most of the time. Because whether we like it or not, people are going to follow our actions. And that's why we have lessons like we do this morning as we study the scriptures. Because Jesus knows that. And he recognized that. And that's how he taught in his ministry, was by demonstration. Because he knew people would follow his actions. When you look at, again, the way that he called his disciples, it was just two words. He said, follow me. And when you look at the disciples and their ministry with Jesus, for his ministry during that 3-year period, as you look through the Gospels, they really didn't have a whole lot to do. They had certain time periods of limited commission where they would go out and they would come back. But during that 3 years, who are we reading primarily about? Jesus. So what are they doing? They're watching. They're learning and they're studying. As was brought out this morning, Jesus is a rabbi, he's a teacher, and they were expected not necessarily to do anything right then. They were expected to follow him and watch him. And Jesus knew that people would do what he did, and that's why he called them the way that he did. We're going to bring out that concept in our mentorship class and try to mimic it. And that's why I really appreciate Marvin reading this. That's why Jesus did things like what we read in John 13. We read it for the second time today, where he gets down and the master is washing the feet of his disciples for one purpose. He says that I have set you an example that you might do as I have done after. That was the whole point. He was mentoring and he was doing something in the hopes that they would imitate his actions. Now, what's different about Jesus than us is Jesus did everything he said. And he also said everything he did. And in our case, we have to be so careful because we sin and we make mistakes. And so sometimes, yes, what we do perhaps is not what we want other people to be doing and repeating. And that's why we have to be so careful about our example in Christ. I have to tell the story. When my parents were younger and we were much younger, I don't even know if I was born yet. I might have been. But my mom was driving along and someone cut her off and Brandon yells from the back seat, "Moron!" And he's like two. Where did he get that? She's pointing to dad, right? Right? I got to throw you under the bus for a minute. But you know what? Children imitate their parents, don't they? And that's why you have to be so careful what you say, what you do, what you watch, what you listen to. Because even though you might not think you are, you're teaching your children. And I pray that as Kylie and I in the future think about children, and if God blesses us in that way in the years to come, that those will be things that her and I can consider and think about. And I just pray that God will make us good parents in that way. Think about Paul. Paul got this too. 1 Corinthians 4, 16 through 17, he says, "I urge you then be imitators of me." Now catch verse 17. This is fantastic. He says, "Be imitators of me. That's why I sent you Timothy." What? "I thought you want me to follow your actions, Paul." And of course, we know what he means. Chapter 11, he says, "Be imitators of me as I am of Christ." So when you looked at Paul, you shouldn't have seen Paul. You know who you should have seen? Christ. But Paul says, "I want you to imitate me as I imitate Christ, and that's why I sent you Timothy." Now, why did he send him Timothy? Because Timothy was studying with Paul and learned and was being mentored by him. So when you saw Timothy, you didn't see Timothy. Guess who you saw? Paul. But you didn't really see Paul. Guess who you saw? Christ. And if we do mentorship right, every time someone is duplicated in that way, we should get back to the top and everyone should see Jesus Christ. And that's what we see in Paul's language and what he's saying. And we see that with Timothy. "You, however, have followed my teaching, my conduct," not just his words, his actions, "my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfast, my persecutions, and my sufferings that happened at Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra." And of course, we read about that in the book of Acts on his first journey. Daniel 11. This is our challenge this evening, is to stand firm and take action. Because it's not enough to just talk the talk, as I drop things. It's not enough to just talk the talk. We have got to walk the walk. And sometimes, to my fault, I relate far too often with the church of Ephesus in the book of Revelation. Because this is a church that had the right teaching, but they had forgotten to follow it up with the right action. And so in verse 1, "To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, The words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and have found them to be false. I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you've not grown weary. He has a lot of good to say about them, doesn't he? Was the right teaching important to the Ephesians? They were testing, and when someone said they were an apostle, they tested them, and then if they had the wrong teaching, they marked them and said, no, this is not correct, and they were doing that right. The right teaching, doing everything in word in the name of the Lord was important to them. But verse 4, but I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love that you had at first. Remember, therefore, where you have fallen and repent and do the works that you did at first. And when I look at the church in Ephesus and I think about myself, I get it. Because I look at my life and I look at what Paul is telling us through Christ, or what Christ is telling us through Paul in Colossians chapter 3. And everything that I do in word and in deed must be done in the name of the Lord. It's just like faith without works is dead. Or we must worship God in spirit and truth. Because worship just in truth, but with no spirit, is not right worship. Worship just in spirit, but not truth, is not right worship. In the same way, if I'm going to live as a disciple of Christ, doing everything in word in the authority of Christ, but not in deed, does not make me a disciple of Christ. And doing perhaps things in deed, now that's good, but without the right word, that also disqualifies me. It's like the Pharisees, they honored them, the Lord, with their lips, as Isaiah prophesied. They had the right, you know, they were doing the right thing, so to speak, but their hearts were far from me. There was something missing. They didn't own it. And in our life, that's the point, is I have to have both. Don't just talk the talk. We need to walk the walk. So this has been an application lesson tonight, and I hope it's been convicting for you, because it's been convicting for me, and there's some things that I need to make some changes with in my life. And I hope you will too. If you look in the scriptures and recognize those things, change those. And allow Jesus to be the Lord of your life in that way. We invite you tonight, if you have the opportunity, we have a prayer meeting that will be happening in our apartment tonight. And we'll provide dinner. So please come if you're willing. And if you need an address to that, let us know. And if not, be safe. And we look forward to see everyone back here for Bible study, either Tuesday for the mentorship class or Wednesday night for midweek Bible study. But if you're here tonight and you need encouragement from this family, or if you want to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ through repentance and baptism to walk in newness of life, let's do so now and let's stand and sing the song of encouragement.